the latest episode of In the Mix with Leah B. I am your host, Leah B., where I provide a history lesson on all things Black, related to Black music and culture. Yes, and this is episode 69, and this episode, it is on Maya. So let's get into it. So this episode, how I discovered her music was in high school. And I remember the video. It was called All About Me with Cisco in it. And she had that whole, she was dancing in the stage or whatever, dancing on in a theater. And she had that whole Asian look going with the outfit and everything. That was probably back in like the late 90s, 98. Yeah, 98 especially. And I just remember that video and everything like that. So that's how I discovered her music. And I just remember hearing her that song on the radio. And I actually liked that song. And whatnot. So, yeah. So Maya Marie Harrison was born on October 10th, 1979, in D.C. She was like the oldest of like three kids. I think she had like two brothers. So she was the oldest out of all of them. Her dad was a musician, so that's how she really got her start, was her dad. He was a musician and singer. Her mom was an accountant. So she grew up in the suburbs of DC. And like I mentioned, her younger brothers were Chaz and Negril. And she was very musically inclined. So she took violin lessons throughout her childhood, but her main focus was dance. Like she would take dance after school all the time, all day, every day. And she took ballet lessons at two. And she also had jazz, tap jazz and tap at four. And her tap dancing skills actually gave her an opportunity to study with one of the best known tap dancers in the world. Not the country, but in the world. Sevion Glover. And how she got connected with him was when he came to DC for a workshop. And while she was at the workshop, he actually saw her and chose her for a solo dance performance at the Kennedy Center. And that's when, I guess, when her dad was there seeing her perform, that's when he realized that she was serious about music and dance and everything like that. So when she got serious, he started shopping around her demo tape. She made a demo tape, shopping around, and that's when she got an interest from this record company of the name of University Music, and the guy's name was Had Assam. And after graduating from high school at 16, that's when she started, she actually took a few classes at the University of Maryland, and but she was really focusing on music. And once She did that. That's when she got signed to Interscope and was signed to University Music with that guy. And so within the next like 2 years, that's when she started working on her debut album. So the guy who was over the label, Assam, was able to, like for her debut album, he hired like Elite Team to make her debut album pop. And so she worked with Missy Elliott, Babyface, Diane Warren, Drew Hill, a guy named Daryl Pearson, and Silk the Shocker. And so basically, I think she was like the first female singer of that record label. And she was like, the staff at Interscope envisioned her to be like this, the main female R&B artist. So during that time, you had like all the teen singers popping at the time. You had Brandy, you had Monica, you had Aaliyah popping at that time. And her debut album was released in April of 1998, and it did pretty good. People loved her album. It peaked at number 29 on the US 200 charts and sold up to 1.4 million copies domestically, and it went platinum as well. And it yielded like three successful singles. Well, you had the song All About Me, which was featured with Sisqó, which became like a top 10 hit. And also Moving On with Silk the Shocker. I remember that video. I'll be moving on. Yes. Yeah, I remember that. Even though I don't like Silk the Shocker, he couldn't really sing to me. I mean, not sing. He couldn't really rap. He was kind of whack. Sorry, but during that time, No Limit was like popping at that time. I was not feeling him. I mean, man, he was cute, but he couldn't rap. But anyway. And she also had a song, My First Night With You. I love that song too, as well. I just remember the video too. The guy in the video was like this like thug dude. He was cute. But I just remembered the guy from who played Joe Jackson on the Jackson 5 movie mini series. He was the dad on there of the video on the video. Oh man. That was funny. But anyway, the album, she was nominated for two Soul Train Music Awards for Best Best R&B Soul and Rap New Artist and Best R&B Album Female, and also an NAACP Image Award for Outstanding New Artist as well. And also during that time, during like the 1990s, 98, she was featured on the Rugrats movie with the song Take Me There. Take me there. I wanna go there. Take me there. I wanna go there. Take me to that great place with Walt Disney. Okay, sorry. And it had Blackstreet, this rapper by the name of Blanky Blank, and Mace. And it reached number one in New Zealand. And then she was had a song with ODB, Old Dirty Bastard, with the song Ghetto Superstar for his album solo, as well, was known as Ghetto Superstar as well, and that became her biggest hit. And it went number one worldwide. And it actually got her first nomination for her first Grammy nomination for Best Rap Performance by a Duo or Group category as well. And that song was featured on the Bullworth soundtrack as well. And by 99, she was like everywhere. She was in acting. She decided to do acting as well. She was in a group in a movie called Into Deep with LL Cool J and Omar Epps as well. That movie was kind of whack. I just remember it was just stupid to me. I didn't like it. It had mixed reviews. I wasn't feeling it at all. The only reason why I wanted to see it was because LL Cool J was in it. And during that time, while she was acting and trying to get her acting chops together and everything, she was focusing on her second album, which was known as Fear of Flying, which had a bunch of producers. Rodney Jerkins was on there. Swizz Beatz, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, and the actual name of the album itself was inspired by a book called Fear of Flying. It was a 1973 novel was written by a woman named of Erica Jung. So that's what Fear Flying meant, basically. So basically, the book shared, the title shared a lot of similarities towards female sexuality and development of, like, feminism, pretty much. And she did some, she did writing on her debut album as well. Her debut album, she wrote a few songs, but on her second album, that's when she went full force. She produced it, mixed it, mastered it, all that. And that was released in April of 2000. And it sold 72,000 copies, and the song Best of Me, featuring Jadakiss, didn't do very well at all. And even though I like that song, I like Best of Me. That was a good song. And it basically suffered the sophomore slump. So it didn't do. Basically, the sophomore slump is where it basically make you or break you, pretty much. You mean, you probably did pretty good on your debut album, and the sophomore slump basically means, like, you either gonna get a third album, or your career is just done after that. And she had the second single off that album was called The Case of the X. And that became her breakout hit internationally in Australia. So it topped the Australian charts for 2 weeks. And it reached number two and number three in the US and the UK as well. So they re-released it. So after with that album, with that song, Case of the X, that's when Interscope re-released her second album in November of that year. And when they did that, she earned a Soul Train Music Award nomination for Best R&B Soul Female and a MOBO nomination for Best Album. So that's like the Grammys for the Brit Awards. And the MOBO Awards is basically their version of the British version of like honoring black music, whether it be in the hip hop, R&B, UK drill, soul, reggae, jazz, gospel, and African music as well. Yeah. And also during that time, it sold. Once they re-released it, it sold 1.2 million copies in the U.S. and it went platinum. And then it went gold in Canada and Australia as well. And by 2001, she already had her own, no, she was already had a 9 top 10 hits by that time and had 6 million copies. Albums were sold worldwide and whatnot. And then she was featured in another soundtrack called the Atlantis Empire soundtrack, which Diane Warren wrote a song called Where the Dream Takes You. And it was featured at the end of the movie. I never saw it. And then 2001 was like her year. And that's when she collaborated with Christina Aguilera, Little Kim, and Pink. And that's when they did remade Patti LaBelle's Lady Marmalade, which was on the Moulin Rouge soundtrack. And that's when it blew up, that song did. It reached number one in over 15 countries at that time, including the U.S. And it spent like 5 weeks at number one. And that's when she was winning all the awards. She won the 2001 Video Music Awards, MTV Video Music Awards, because I remember watching that ceremony. And a year later, she won her first Grammy for Lady Marmalade for Best Pop Collaboration with Vocals. So after Fear of Flying and Lady Marmalade success, she started dabbling in acting again. And she was in the musical, well, the film Chicago. And that grossed like $306.8 million. And she was winning all types of awards during that time. Critics' Choice Movie Awards, Actors Guild Awards. And she, by the 2000s, was like her decade, pretty much. And she like appeared on a hip hop alternative group called Jurassic 5 for their song was called Thin Line, and that did pretty well. By July of 2003, she released Mood Ring. That's like my favorite album of hers to me. And that sold 113,000 copies in its first week and peaked at number three on the U.S. Billboard 200, which surpassed her previous first week sales as well. So with this album, the sound was completely different. So she was in a more sensual sound with this album, and she co-wrote and produced everything off that album. So it talked about, it was influenced by all types of different musical subjects, stylings, all that stuff. So it had pop, rock, soul, R&B, hip hop, Quiet Storm, and the song on there was called My Love Is Like Whoa. I love that song, My Love Is Like Whoa. And that peaked at on the top 20 during that time. And and the second single that I absolutely love was Falling. That is like my jam. I remember hearing that song when I was working. This was like, dang, this was like 20 years ago, bro. I remember hearing this song when I was working at Old Navy. I was like 19. I remember hearing it on the radio. And like, man, I fell in love with that song. That was like my jam. That was like the jam. But it didn't do as well for some reason. Like, My Love is like, whoa. But I remember the video when she was stalking old dude. Like, literally stalking homeboy. I would be kind of freaked out. But, yeah. I just remember the video. It was funny. So, the album itself reached the top 40 on the Billboard Hot R&B Hip Hop Songs chart, and Mood Ring stayed on the charts for 18 weeks, and it went gold eventually, and it sold over it sold 49,000 copies to date. And by 2004, she was in another movie called Dirty Dancing Havana Nights, and she was in another movie called Shall We Dance, and she played, I think in Shall We Dance, she played a lounge singer named Lola Martinez, and was the fiance of one of the guys in the movie, and this was in Shall We Dance with Richard Gere was in that movie. And when Dirty Dancing basically was a remake of the actual movie Dirty Dancing, like the actual Dirty, this was part two to Dirty Dancing in the 80s, and that didn't do well at all. The second, the follow-up, the one that she was in, the Havana Nights joint, it didn't do well at all. And that's when she was playing the lounge singer. And when she did Shall We Dance, which was a remake of an actual Japanese film, it did really good. And that grossed like $170,000 worldwide. And that's when she was working on her fourth album. And it was like called Control Freak. It was supposed to be released like mid-2005. And that's when it, like, she made the record, and they shelved it pretty much. And that's when she decided to leave her management and leave A&M, period, at the fall. And that's when she was still acting. She was in a horror film called Curse with Christina Ricci and the guy from what was the name of that show? Joshua Jackson was in this show. I can't even remember. It was popular in the 90s. It used to be on WB. I forgot. But anyway, he was in it. And it did bad. It did not do very good at all. It was terrible. And then she was still acting on the show called NCIS, and she was in another romantic comedy by 2006 called The Heart Specialist, and Wood Harris was in it, Zoe Saldana was in it, Brian J. White was in it. It premiered at the Boston Film Festival, but it didn't even get released until 2011. I think it went video. It either went to video or it was very limited theater release. So, by 2007, She signed with a whole nother record label, and it was Universal Motown, and that's when she started working, still working on her fourth album. And she completed the album within 3 months. It was, you know, more kind of the, by that time, R&B has changed. It was more hip hop, R&B type vibes. And she had a song with Lil Wayne, because I remember this song called Lock You Down. And they played it on the radio, but I do remember it. And then after that, it was like a buzz single. And then her second single called Riding, I remember that song too. As well, it was released, but it didn't do well at all. So basically, the fourth album, like, it got pushed back so many times. It just basically, eventually, it got accidentally leaked in Japan, and that's when, which by that time it was called Liberation. And it only went, you were able, the only way you could get the album was by, downloading it digitally in October of 2007. And then she was in another movie, a romantic comedy with a guy who was named Sean Benson. And it did okay. It was at the Boston Film Festival. So by 2008, she was in a movie called Cover, where she played an AIDS victim named Cyndia. It didn't do well at all. It was premiered in selective theaters and whatnot. And there was another movie called Love for Sale, with Jason Weaver was in it, and Jackie Long was in it as well. And she played, I remember seeing that. I think it was on BET. I remember seeing it on BET. They had it on BET. And she played a college student who was in a bad relationship. So by the late 2000s, so 2008, 2009, she left Universal Motown, and that's when she started still making music and everything. But this time she released her material under her own management company and record label called Planet Nine, which she was contracted with, distribute with a Japanese R&B record label named Manhattan Records, which was a division of this group called Lexington Group, to release her new material. And that's when she went independent. And her fifth album that she released under her Planet Nine record label was called Sugar and Spice. And it only was released in Japan, so you can probably get it somewhere online somewhere. So that was released in 2008, December of 2008, and it was basically recorded for the Asian market pretty much. And she had a single off that album called Paradise, which reissued, the Sugar and Spice was reissued in 2009, a year later. And then in 2009, she was in an indie film, a romantic drama comedy called Bottle World. And so as she continued, by 2009, she was releasing new music, and she signed a deal with another record company called Young Empire Music Group. And that's when she released her first mixtape called Beauty in the Streets, Volume 1, which debuted at number 55, and it it peaked at number 55 on the U.S. Hip-hop R&B charts, and then in the fall of 2009, she appeared as a contestant in the season 9 of Dancing with the Stars. I remember seeing that. I thought she was going to win, too. But she never did. So she was one of the front runners. I thought she was going to win, but Donny Osmond won in front of her. I'm like, really, dude? Come on now, bruh. No. And so in 2010, she was featured on, they had a We Are the World for Haiti type of thing. I don't know if you know. In 2010, Haiti had this huge earthquake, and they did a charity single for that country. So, so it was called We Are the World for Haiti. We Are the World 25 for Haiti. And she was in another movie with the guy from Boy Meets World called The Penthouse. It was released in, it didn't do well at all either. So by 2011, she was featured on all these different people's songs and stuff like that as well. And that's when she released her another single called Fabulous Life for her sixth album called Kiss. Keep It Sexy and Simple, which was released in April of 2011 in Japan. And it was, the album was produced by a Cleveland producer named Young Yachty. And it was a bunch of Japanese musicians that were on the song, on the album as well. So Japanese version was released first, and then she had made a U.S. version of the same album, and that was released via iTunes in December of 2011. She had a song on there called Earthquake featuring Trina, which was the lead single for that, and it peaked at number 74. On the R&B charts, and by 2014, she released all different EPs on her Planet 9 album called With Love, which was a Valentine's Day type of EP. And it was to commemorate the release of her debut single, It's All About Me, which was the 16th anniversary of her being in the industry as well. And her With Love EP actually did really well from music critics. People loved that as well. And then she was still doing her acting thing. By 2014, she was in a TV movie called Tentacles, that's the name, Tentacles, which did terrible, it was bad. And then that same month in 2014, she released her second EP called Sweet 42, which was released, that was her second Valentine's Day EP. So it was like a compilation of EPs for Valentine's Day. And then she released a year later a second Valentine's Day EP called Love Elevation Suite, which was released in 2016. And she released her seventh album called Smooth Jones, which I have, which is not a bad album, to be quite honest. And she had the song Welcome to My World and had the song Team You, which peaked, and the Smooth Jones actually peaked at number 30 on the Billboard R&B charts as well. And that's when she received a Grammy nomination for Best R&B Album at the 59th ceremony. So by 2017, she released another single called Ready for Whatever. It was just different buzz singles here and there and whatnot. And then she released another solo project called Ready Part 2, which was her second single in 2017, which was released on November 25th, 2017. And then 2018, again, she had another album, which called You Got Me, which was her third single from her her sixth album called TKO, The Knockout, to commemorate her 12th year of being in the industry. And she released that album with on April 20th, 2018, which was the 20th anniversary of her debut album. And she had another single off that called I Got My Own, called GMO, with a rapper by the name of Tink. And she was also in a reality show called Girls Cruise with Little Kim and Chili. That was pretty good. That was a pretty good album as well. I mean, the show as well. Yeah, so she was in another movie. So she kept, by like the end of the 2010s, she kept releasing records. And her last album was on in May of 29th of 2020. And she had a song called Space and Time. And that was like a track, like a techno track and whatnot. So she was in another movie called My Favorite Christmas Melody. That was in 2021. And she was in Shark Tank as well. The TV show Shark Tank, which I love that show. And by 2022, she reunited with Christina Aguilera, who did Lady Marmalade maybe 20 years after that for an appearance at LA Pride. So yeah, she's still out here doing her thing. She was just recently, at the beginning of this year, she was in a rebooted cameo of House Party. So yeah, she's still doing her thing and whatnot. So she just commemorated the 25th anniversary of her debut album. So that's why I wanted to do a episode on her, because I want to commemorate her 25th anniversary for her debut album. So yeah, so she's still out here doing her thing and whatnot. And she also became a vegan too as well. And I was actually trying to see, I followed her on Instagram, so I was just trying to see what kind of recipe she does and everything like that. So yeah, I just wanted to commemorate her 25th anniversary of her debut album. That's why I wanted to do this this episode on her. So if you guys want to keep up with the podcast, In the Mix with Leah B is on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, got a website, InTheMixWithLeahB.com. If you want to support the podcast, donate, whatever. You can, I'm having it in the show notes. It's buymeacoffee.com in the mix at the end of that. And, yeah, you guys have a blessed day, week, whatever. And, peace and love.